Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Set smart TV to record the football later.
You've got to be joking, haven't you? I ain't got a blooming clue. But I tell you what, if you want to chuck a few quid on it, your best bet is to try that BetVictor app. Even I'm a whiz on that. Listen, I've got a little tip for you, and you did need this from me. Oh, that'll be Sandra with the shopping. Sorry, mate, I've got a dash.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet with BetVictor. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly.
Son, seen the remote?
Very good day to you all. Welcome back to Eye on La Liga, brought to you, of course, and as we are always brought to you every single week, by BetVictor. I'm Ollie Wilson. Alongside me, once again, Jason Pettigrove, as we dive into some of the dirty depths of Spanish football every single week here on the show. Jace, we're recording on a Monday. Have you got that Monday feeling today? Are you done with the week already? I know the crap weather's back in England, so...
I've got that we have no life other than being on podcast feeling.
What do you mean? What are you on about? We did one, Thursday we last recorded?
I love talking to you, really, Ollie. Really, I do.
Oh, come on. There's such a sense of apathy in that voice as well that I now really don't know where I stand on this. This could be one podcast too many and we have to ditch this before the season even starts. After we troll through a summer of... rubbish rumours and VAR discussion just as the football's about to get going, Jason's turning around and saying, I've had enough.
Yeah, having one of those moments, a huff and turn on my heels and I'm gone. Yeah.
Unbelievable. You think footballers are prima donnas, try working with this guy, I tell you. Outrageous.
That's rich coming from you.
Oh, come on. I'm a fine, upstanding gentleman. Thank you very much. Always here. Always ready to record whenever we need to. But you're keeping well, mate. Good weekend, I expect.
Very well. Thank you for asking. Hope you are too.
Yeah. All good. I got to experience Boca Juniors and the Bombonera for the first time in my life yesterday, which was quite something, I have to say. Although a little bit disappointed by it as well. It's noisier than any Spanish ground that I've been to. The only ground that I really want to go to that I haven't been to in Spain is the Mestalla. I haven't done the Wando yet, but I'm okay with that at the moment. I really wish I'd done the Calderon. But I think in terms of a design perspective, I think the Bombonera is about as close to the Mestalla as you could possibly get in terms of really steep, close stadium. But it does miss having no away fans. I was chatting with somebody else about this today. The call and answer that you get from home fans and away fans before kickoff is certainly missed. They're not allowed away fans in Argentinian football because it's too violent. Although there was no threat of danger at the ground last night. Again, a slight disappointment. I went there with this edge of like, I'm going to the extremes of world football. You know, Boca Juniors, this is going to be really intense. And admittedly, I wasn't behind the goal and with the ultras, which, let's face it, I'm not going to be going in there anytime soon, not with my ability of speaking Spanish. But I was just lacking that edge. I was wondering if you've been to any grounds in world football that you've gone into expecting perhaps a bit too much, and it's actually been, however great it was, I take nothing away from the experience last night, it was fantastic. But at the same time, I thought it was going to be a little bit more in my head in the build-up to it.
I don't think I've been into any that I've expected too much, but I think, a bit like what you've just said with Argentinian football, I've experienced that with Spanish football, that the lack of away fans because of the distances involved. I wouldn't say it makes it boring as such, but there's definitely some spice that's added by having even just a few hundred away fans at the ground. But you know, unless you're absolutely hardcore or it's like a local derby, for instance, Eibar against Athletic or Real Sociedad, then you're not going to get fans there. So I think it's just generally accepted now, and that's how it is.
Also, I think the one of the other kind of anti-climaxes in world football that I've been to was in the Bernabeu, watching Real Madrid, just because of what happened at half-time, where everybody tucks into their sandwiches and then the players come out for the second half and everybody who hasn't finished their sandwich is just more focused on their food than actually the second half of football that's about to take place. It was against Villarreal and many, many years ago now, this. But I just kind of felt there was no pop at the start of the second half, no kind of the atmosphere's coming back. It was, all right, hold on, you guys get playing once we finished our sandwiches here, thank you very much, coming from the crowd. It was very peculiar indeed. But let's go away from football stadiums around the world. Let's talk about a man who's changed football stadiums this summer. Nabil Fekir, moving from Lyon to Real Betis. We should have touched on this last week, Jason, when we were talking about Gareth Bale and his possible departure. We'll touch on that as well, because that now all bets seem to be off on that one. Bale's suddenly marketing the Real Madrid third strip, albeit with a rather glum look on his face, and it looks like he's going to be staying. But Nabil Fekir coming across to Real Betis from French football, really good player as well, wonderful attacking player, can play across the front line behind a centre forward, creates goals, scores goals as well. A man who 12 months ago was all set to sign for Liverpool for around about £60 million or so, €60 million actually, sorry. And suddenly Liverpool got a bit of a heebie-jeebie about an old knee injury that he had, decided to call the thing off at the last minute. And I mean at the very last minute, so much so that some areas in the press were reporting that Fekir had already signed because personal terms had been agreed, financial terms between the two clubs had been agreed. It was all good to go. And it was the very last minute it got cancelled. A year later, Betis were able to steal him for €20 million. That's an absolute coup in this transfer market for a player of this quality.
It is, but I think it's important to point out that he did only have or had a year on his contract left. And I think that probably had a big, big part to play in the transfer fee. I think Betis have, you know, pulled a masterstroke with this one, actually, because even if they have him for a year and look to sell him on, yes, Lyon will get 50% of any future transfer. But if he does well in Spain, which I think you or I fully expect him to do, then I think they'll more than double their money if that's what they want to do. I think with Lo Celso potentially getting close to a switch to Tottenham, Betis had to act. They had to bring in somebody that sort of relatively similar, and I think Fekir fits that bill. He's a dynamic player, he's always on the front foot. He's still only 26. He has got that resale value if things don't work out. And I think Betis under Quique Setien, they were renowned for being great technically. Fekir won't have any problems in that regard either. He's been a really good conduit for Lyon to tax when he's not taken the lead himself. So I think his associative play will often sort of set the tempo, I think, for Betis this coming season. And I'm very, very interested to see how he does. I think he can fire them into the upper echelons of the table, certainly in the first couple of months of the season.
A Betis side that you could probably look at this point, the quality they still have, although expecting some of that to depart. You mentioned Lo Celso. I've been chastised by some people about the Lo Celso, Lo Celso debate here in Argentina. Apparently it is Celso, because of his Italian roots on an Argentinian name.
Marcello, Marcello, tomato, tomato. Who
well, which is interesting, because Marcello is Marcello and not Marcello, even though a lot of people have started to change it. It's a minefield player name pronunciation in this day and age. I mean, just to sidetrack once again, Brazilian names are probably the worst for me in terms of any Brazilian player called Enrique. I've been told by, excuse me, a leading Brazilian football journalist that apparently all of Brazil would pronounce it Enrique. But if you're an English commentator or broadcaster and you've got somebody Henrique as joining a new club, you're never going to turn around and say, of course, it's Enrique, because everyone will look at you like you're an absolute buffoon. Similarly, the R on Brazilian names is actually an H pronunciation in Brazil. So Robinho is actually Obinho. Ronaldinho is Ronaldinho, stuff like that. Again, you'll look absolutely mad if you start saying that on television or radio anywhere. So, but apparently,
don't look at you like that anyway, of course.
Oh, thank you very much, Jason. Yeah, I'm very glad I'm off camera like 99% of the time, to be honest, so they don't have to see the befuddled look in my eye when I'm looking at player names and trying to work out what the pronunciation I should go with. But yeah, obviously Lo Celso will be expected to leave and should be on his way in the next week or so out of Betis. Junior Firpo, the talented young left-back, has been linked with a move away from the club as well this summer. But in general, it's a relatively balanced side, except for the fact that really they've only got one out-and-out centre-forward when you look at their squad right now. If Ruby the boss can perhaps bring in another striker to support and be a backup, they've got a really good-looking side going forward with a solid bit of depth, particularly in the heart of the pitch as well, and quality in the middle of the park to be able to stifle attacks coming back the other way. It's certainly a team that you'd look at on paper at the start of the season and think could make a run for a Europa League spot, particularly after everything we saw last season and the craziness that seems to come about every year below the top three or so.
Yeah, I think really, potentially, Ruby's got to be looking at shoring up the defence. I think that was Betis' problem last season. They were fantastic going forward, had some superb results, and they were very, very pleasing on the eye, very good to watch in a lot of their games. But they just left themselves wide open far too often. I think if he can somehow lock that down, he's got the players, the core players from last season that did so well. And I don't think a Europa League place is beyond them by any stretch. I think it will depend very much on how they start. They don't really want to be playing catch-up for too long. But I'm very interested to see how they get on. Very interested indeed.
Very interested to see how they'll start as well, particularly on what day of the week they're going to be starting their season on, as news out of Spanish football brings up another bit of controversy between La Liga officials and the Spanish Football Federation, the RFEF. As the RFEF confirmed earlier this weekend, that football in La Liga is only going to be played on weekend games. Much to the dismay of La Liga, who had already lined up their opening weekend of fixtures to have games on the Friday, including Athletic Club against Barcelona to kick things off in San Mames on the 16th of August on a Friday night, and games on a Monday as well, a couple of games already scheduled for that opening Monday of the season. But the Spanish Football Federation has said, no, we're going to have games only on Saturdays and Sundays. One for the fans, perhaps, to be happy about, not one for La Liga to be happy about, with an estimated revenue potential loss for La Liga of around about €2 billion because of TV rights and contracts.
I think the way the RFEF have gone about it is taking the biscuit just a little, but in actual fact, I do agree with Luis Rubiales. I think, games really should always be on a Saturday and Sunday. I think it won't just benefit the fans, and particularly those fans that tend to come from abroad and fly into Spain to watch certain games. But I think the teams as well, I don't really recall if it was Athletic or may even have been Betis last season, but there was one team in particular that were consistently had Monday night games for a while, and it became a real problem. So I think in order to minimise that, it makes sense to play them on a Saturday and a Sunday. Obviously, from Javier Tebas's point of view, the La Liga chief, he's already constructed those deals with the various media partners, and they do stand to lose an awful lot of money or have to, sit back around the table and try to work something out. There's always been this fight, hasn't there, between La Liga and the Federation, and more so now with Tebas and Rubiales, because it's quite clear that they don't get on. They've clashed over they've clashed over other issues in the past, and the one that readily springs to my mind is the Barca-Girona game that was supposed to be played in Miami, which Tebas was convinced was going to happen. He was eventually overruled, and obviously the players, initially I think they towed the party line, but nobody was really behind it, really. So I think what it comes down to is common sense, and a lot of, dare I say it, a lot of what Javier Tebas does isn't common sense. So I can see what the Federation are trying to do, but maybe they could have gone about it in a different manner. And I think what we have now is an August the 7th hearing, and Tebas's assertion is that he's being undermined, and whether it will get passed in his favour at that late stage, we'll find out.
Well, that's one thing, is that a hearing on August the 7th is only 11 days beforehand, and TV schedulers will be irate with whatever ends up taking place because of the fact that their schedule is almost a week away from going out on air, and they still don't know if they're going to have games on the Monday or the Friday. I definitely don't agree with you with the idea of, great, it's good for travelling fans that fly in to go and see games. That's not a priority. that just isn't a priority. The only teams that is a priority for are Barcelona and Real Madrid. And I'm sorry, but they get enough travelling supporters anywhere at games. I mean, not to go all Premier League talk as well, but you mean you look at Manchester United, for instance, and the number of people that have come out in the press and said that Old Trafford is losing the atmosphere because of the tourism support. We shouldn't be supporting that in any way, shape or form, because the tourism support, I love going to football. I love being a fan and getting the chance to go around and see different games around the globe. But at the same time, the increased tourism support is killing off opportunities for real fans of big clubs to get to go to games. And so I certainly stand, perhaps a little hypocritically, on the side of the idea that we should try and encourage local fans to be able to get to the games more often. We shouldn't be trying to create a business out of the tourism of football so much so that it actually negatively impacts what tourists are going to go and see at the end of the day.
Okay, let's leave that to one side then, that part of the argument, and just on the basis of Friday, Monday games as a general rule of thumb, what do you think? Are you for or against?
I quite like it. I don't like the fact that they sometimes do a double header on a Monday or on a Friday, for instance, but two standalone games on a Monday night and a Friday night, I think are actually great, because A, it gives some prime time television time to clubs that may not get it, because it's unlikely that Barca, Real Madrid and others like that are going to be moved to those Monday or Friday games, particularly in the early part of the season, because of their European exploits and the fact that they have to have some time between a Wednesday Champions League game and playing their next, of course, Champions League game the following week to squeeze in a La Liga game. So I like the idea of smaller clubs being put on a high-profile stage. I love a nighttime kickoff, particularly when it's a standalone nighttime kickoff. Always great, in my opinion. There's always a bit of extra fire and intensity, although, of course, I understand that in Spain, a nighttime kickoff isn't perhaps as rare as in the UK and some other leagues, because they've been doing Saturday and Sunday night kickoffs for years now in La Liga. But I don't mind it. I don't think it's such a big deal that we need to start rearranging the season. For once, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I'm kind of on Tebas' side here, particularly as in this day and age, TV is what rules the roost and creates the majority of the money for football. So
I don't disagree with that, but isn't there then an issue of saturation in terms of if you've got a European week particularly, then you're going to have football literally 7 days a week and then it becomes just a little bit too much? Or is there no such thing as too much football on the box?
I mean, we're already at saturation point. This summer proves that without a major men's tournament going on, you could still watch football almost every single day this summer with the under-20s and, of course, the Women's World Cup, that were both excellent tournaments to watch, and I'm not saying that that we shouldn't be watching them, but I'm just saying we are at that saturation point. Almost every game of football, whether it's a major tournament, a minor tournament like the under-20s, which obviously isn't a minor tournament to those players, but is on the box in some way, shape or form. So we don't need to worry about saturation point. We've done that already. Now what we're looking at is, okay, imagine if you're a Sociedad fan. You don't want to travel all the way across the country to go and see a side play on a Saturday or a Sunday, let alone a Friday or a Monday night. But if you have a game on a Friday or a Monday night, your game can be the standalone game that you'll be able to watch and go and either sit at home and watch it, and you'll be able to see your team at least in the full 90 minutes. That's something that I see as a positive.
Good point, well made. I won't disagree.
Almost taking the podcast in full circle from the intro about away fans in grounds. If you can't get to the game, physically unable to, if it's on television, great, you can sit down and you can watch it. Now, is television destroying the atmospheres in Spanish football stadiums because some people would rather just watch it on TV than pay to go to the ground, particularly with inflated ticket prices for when Barca and Real Madrid come in? Sure, and that's a problem that we need to look at as well. But in general, if an actual fan can sit down and watch their team on a Friday or a Monday night, I think that's a great thing. And I'm very surprised that I'm siding with A, the TV companies, and B, Tebas on this one. But particularly at this close to the start of the season, this is an absolutely ludicrous thing for the RFEF to start talking about.
Yeah, indeed.
Mind boggles. Mind boggling still at everything that's going on with Gareth Bale as well, Jason, because he's
not
staying.
Gareth Bale with Real Madrid. I mean, this just mind. But I think John Toshack summed it up perfectly. And I'm going to use a slightly contentious word here, but maybe it could be bleeped out. He said over the weekend in after the result against Atletico, bar Hazard, they're left with the same 11 bastards as before. And that, for me, sums up perfectly what is wrong at Real Madrid at the moment. There's meant to have been this... I don't want to keep calling it revolution, evolution, whichever way you look at it. But they just look as poor in pre-season as they have done over the last couple of seasons domestically. And I don't buy this whole argument from Sergio Ramos and Zidane to an extent is only pre-season. I'm sorry, you know, this is when you're getting your fitness and when you're looking... Look at the difference between them and Atletico. Atletico were hungry, you know, they worked for every ball. Real Madrid were lethargic and tired and just disinterested. Like, they were coasting already because I don't think... Some of those senior players there don't have people coming up behind them now that are really pushing them for their place. They know they're going to be in the starting 11 every week, and we sort of, I know Ramos didn't play, but we saw it with the Ajax game last year, that it's just, as soon as you come up against a young, hungry side that really wants it, Real Madrid just collapse. And I think Zidane has got a hell of a season ahead of him, really. I mean, Bale perhaps not going now, maybe that saves him to some degree, because they certainly seem to be a better team with him in it than without him in it. But the atmosphere in the dressing room can't be one of happiness at the moment. We've heard what Bale's agent Jonathan Barnett has come out and said, that basically Zidane and Bale don't have any relationship. I still think it was a huge surprise that Perez stopped the move to China at the 11th hour. Equally, I'm surprised, as I said in the podcast last week, I didn't think that Bale would go anywhere other than the Premier League if he was going to leave Real Madrid. And the fact that, from what we understand, it was very, very close for him going to China, it astonishes me, frankly. He's still got a lot to offer. When he's not injured, he's still a fantastic player.
Well, Madrid wanted a transfer fee that the Chinese weren't willing to meet. If Bale really wanted to go that much, he'd have sacrificed maybe £250,000 a week of his contract that was set to be £1 million a week. And he'd have got I'm sure that would have helped garner some of the revenue to get this deal done, if he really wants to be away, which makes me think that either he's happy to sit and take the money at Real Madrid and do what it looks like he's going to do, because he's not going to feature really in Zidane's team. And it was just a case of one of those moments where somebody really wants something, you're not fussed about it either way, and you throw out a wild number to see what they do. And you can imagine Bale having a chat with the representatives from Chinese football, and Bale sat there and said, "All right, yeah, give me £1 million a week and I'll come." And they go away. "All right, okay, we can do that." It's like, "Oh, geez, all right, yeah, £1 million a week. Fine, if you're going to do that, I'll head off to China." And then Madrid asks for the fee, it all gets pulled down, and the deal doesn't end up going through in the end. Mind-blowing that he was going to go there. He was getting slammed and criticised across European media about the decision. Now he's going to be at Madrid. Now he's lost a lot of credibility in almost having this move to China. Now he's going to be in a side where they don't want him to play. Still doing the advertising work, as I said, advertising the new third kit and looking miserable doing it. And not only that, it's a side that's playing an absolute shambles in their pre-season. And
Zidane doesn't want him to play, from what we can take from the various sources that we look at. Perez would appear to want him in the team.
And that's fine, but Perez can't be involved. And I know that's a very difficult thing to say, but Perez shouldn't be involved in what Zinedine Zidane as a manager wants to do. And I've no doubt that Zidane coming back to Real Madrid last year, it was a case of, right, I'll come back and try and save you out of this massive sinkhole you've got yourselves into, but it's going to be done on my terms. I'm going to be Zidane. I get to choose the 11 that go out and start the game. I get to choose who I want to have coming into this side, and I get to make the decision of who's going to be in my squad and who's in my plans and who isn't.
Yeah, but which is always no good. Doubt. Look how poorly it's gone since his comeback. And okay, you can argue it was coming to the end of the season. There wasn't an awful lot to play for last season. But they've been as poor since he's come back as they were in the season before he left. I've seen nothing from them at all to suggest that they're going to challenge in any way, shape or form next season. And Bale will give them something extra. I think, you know, Zidane's got to suck it up, you know, rein his ego back in a little bit, I think, and accept that if he wants Real Madrid to do well, then Bale forms part of that 11. But Bale himself has to be more interested as well. We can't keep having this situation where we're hearing that he just fancies playing golf or whatever.
Raul has got to miss a meal because of his bedtime. Yeah, that was my favourite one.
But Raul as a group have got to be together, otherwise they're going to struggle to, you know, to get second again, much like they did last season.
It's like a dressing room more divided than when Mourinho was there, and nobody really thought that was possible because he decided to split that dressing room right down the middle. Also, could somebody tell Diego Costa just to have a day off? Like at some point. What a 65 minutes in a pre-season friendly to go and get four goals, including a penalty, and himself sent off. I mean, somebody's up for the new season a little too early, to be honest, isn't he?
But isn't that what you want to see? I mean, that for me, that's fantastic. It's typical Costa. You don't want to take that away from him. And again, I go back to my point I made just a little bit earlier on. The difference between those two sides. And Athletic side, let's not forget that a few weeks ago we were writing off completely because of the amount of big name players that they'd lost. And now look, they've changed that dynamic literally at the drop of a hat. They've brought in players that are hungry, that want it. And it's just a totally different dynamic to Real Madrid at the moment. And I don't honestly know how Real are going to change that. He wants Pogba, apparently, Zidane. Well, where's the money going to come from? And is he the right player? I think Real Madrid are actually clutching at straws at this point, which I find incredible.
James is sticking around. They've got to find a way to get him in the side because he's a player that can certainly make a positive impact for them. Jovic now looking like he's going to miss the start of the season through injury is bad news for Real Madrid. I mean, 6-0 down in a pre-season friendly. The one good thing about this International Champions Cup, which I'm not really on board with how either the press tries to talk up and make it like a serious competition when it is just pre-season friendlies going around the globe and making a load of money off that. But also, the clubs sometimes will talk it up, sometimes will play it down. I'm not sure that we need a real tournament aspect to pre-season friendlies because a lot of it is just getting fit and healthy. But if you're going to put Real Madrid against Atletico Madrid on at somewhere like MetLife Stadium and put a load of cameras in front of it, you expect both sides to turn up and perform. And it was fantastic watching Madrid. Look, I'm not an anti-Madrid guy in any way, shape or form, anti-Real in any way, shape or form. I really like Los Blancos, love the history of the club, and I don't really have a horse in the race most of the time in La Liga football. I just enjoy the league and the sport. But for a team to come out and play like that and get humiliated, it's good that it happens in front of cameras so that at least there's some accountability going on. It's, you know, it's not a pre-season friendly behind closed doors somewhere in the darkest depths of nowhere that no one really knows about or anything like that. People will look and be looking at that and going, geez, yeah, that is an absolute shocker. Madrid's torrid off-season continuing and now it's showing dividends on the pitch as well. They're in absolute trouble. And even if, as you say, Ramos comes out and says, oh, it's only a friendly, oh, we don't treat these things with any sincerity, that's almost then a slap in the face to the fans that turn up for these games. It's quite funny how it's a really bad marketing ploy, which what this pre-season friendly tours are all about is marketing at the end of the day for these clubs. And for Ramos to come out and say, we treat these like friendlies, we don't care about them, it's all about fitness, etc., which is probably what it is for every single team. But to openly say that, it's a big can of worms being opened in terms of reputation of these sorts of games, at least how Real Madrid and the players treat it. As I say, yeah, Diego Costa, just have a day off, mate, at some point.
Just picking up on your point about James as well, though. I mean, if I were him, wouldn't you be licking your lips actually having Atleti coming after you? You know, the thought of having to stay with Real Madrid, who, frankly, have discarded you for the last, you know, 2 years, 18 months, whatever it is. And now because there's injuries to Asensio and other players that, okay, we need you now, come and help us in our hour of need, but look what you've got to play alongside. Maybe there's a thing there, an attraction for him that he can be Real's saviour, but certainly if I was in his shoes at this point and looking at what I see, I'd be doing everything to get out and to go to Atleti.
So definitely.
I don't think it's all over as far as he's concerned. He's got a very, very big decision to make, that's for sure.
Rumours around that move is that Atleti are unsure that it's going to take place, which considering a couple of weeks ago it seemed very confident. It's just a change in the dynamic slightly. So something has gone on that we don't know fully about the potential move of James Rodriguez to Atletico Madrid. I'm sure he's just licking his lips at a chance to get away from Real Madrid in any way, shape or form. He played really well at Bayern Munich the last couple of seasons, and perhaps a chance to go and be a part of Atleti and stick one in against Real would be the perfect way for the Colombian to reignite his career. But not that it needs reigniting. As I say, it was great in the Bundesliga, but reignite his La Liga career. But yeah, I'm not sure that one's going to go through from everything that I've seen in the last couple of days or so. Jace, let's leave it there for today because we've whittled on for far too long. We'll try and stay away from Bale and Real Madrid at some point, but they just continue to decide to make headlines for themselves, which is kind of great for us because we can just sit here and break down Real Madrid's disastrous season almost daily at this rate. Right?
Neymar and Barca, the talking point next week, I'm almost certain of that.
Oh, geez. Yeah, let's roll that one out again, shall we? Barca are falling off a cliff in my eyes in terms of their reputation with me. Like, fantastic footballing side, everything. I'm just getting sick and tired of Barca. Really am. And Neymar. Yeah. And then if you throw Neymar and Barca together, I'm done, Jason. Walking away from Barca.
Yeah, as you said, let's leave it there for this week.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for joining us on the show as always, man.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, mate. Talk to you soon.
Remember, for all of your transfer odds, get on to betvictor.com. You must be 18 or over to gamble on BetVictor. Please gamble responsibly. For more information, visit begambleaware.org. We also have a new host for the podcast, which is Anchor FM. Get on to anchor.fm. And just search Eye on the Liga. You'll be able to find us there. It means we're also up on Spotify now as well. If you want to follow us on Spotify, just type in Eye on the Liga into your podcasts and we should crop up there. iTunes and others hopefully following too. Until next week, enjoy all of the transfer rumours and the last of the pre-season friendlies. We're so close to getting down to business in the world of Spanish football. Until then, take care. Enjoy the football while you can. Have a good one.